Well, g'day there, crew. Hope everybody's well and, of course, having a fantastic week. Thanks again for tuning in. If you've never tuned in with us before, we are Mistake Mastery. We love talking all things careers, business, professionals. We're all about everything related to work. So if you're interested in different professions, different careers, business ideas, people that are in various positions that you might be interested in, this is a good place to find out more. This week's guest is Mr. Chris Fontana. Chris is a trained refrigeration mechanic who has worked his way up in the corporate world with a focus on project management. More recently, Chris has taken his skill set solo, moving away from company management to freelancing across a range of business solutions related to refrigeration. In this discussion, you can expect to learn the skills, strategies, and mindsets necessary for transitioning from the corporate world into the freelancing space, the effective management strategies, including celebrating success and ensuring accountability for performance, how to discover your ideal work situation, incorporating insights from Japanese philosophy, strategies for providing effective leadership, and exploring various aspects related to all things and the nature of work. Crew, if there's one person that knows about project management, it's Chris. He used to project manage for one of the largest refrigeration companies in Tasmania and did so at a very, very high level. On top of that, Chris has a wealth of information around transitioning out of that sort of corporate sort of hamster wheel that many of us find ourselves in, into that freelancing zone. So if that sounds like you and you want to find out a little bit more and just understand around the nature of work, this episode is a cracker. Guys, let us please welcome Mr. Chris Fontana. Fontana, welcome to the show. How are you this evening, my friend?
Thanks for having me.
Oh, mate, absolute pleasure. I've been meaning to have you on for a while, and we've had a fair bit of back and forward for a while trying to think about a time and actually get you on and the questions and all this sort of stuff. So I really appreciate you taking the time to finally come on and share a little bit of wisdom with us. Tell us a little bit about who you are and your journey with work and careers and business. I know you've got quite a unique story. We were just talking before the show, and I think you've got a really unique perspective on just the nature of work, and that was really where I want to sort of hopefully lead the conversation.
So I guess I'm a refrigeration mechanic by trade. I started out an apprenticeship probably 20 years ago. Back when I started, you kind of had the three options. Probably in my generation, you went and got a trade, you went to university, or you ended up like in a retail gig, or working at a supermarket or something like that. So I went down the trade route. I got into a trade I didn't particularly know anything about or necessarily wanted to do, but I did want to be an electrician, but ended up coming to sort of falling into this as I had it suggested to me for a group training company. And so I just sort of, I took it up and pursued it, and it sort of opened a lot of doors for me and something that I've really enjoyed doing. So probably did my first 10 years on the tools. So I guess learning my craft and learning my trade, and then went and did got into middle management for probably about sort of 5 or 6 years, and then more onto a senior management role within the same company. And then probably 3 or 4 years ago, just went out on my own. I started subcontracting. So effectively, I was still just managing, but just doing it under a different sort of banner and a different set of payment circumstances, which was, I guess, subcontracting. But then sort of in more recent times, I've really focused on just sort of going out and reducing, doing less and less of that kind of management sort of role for somebody else, and doing more of the stuff that I do want to do. And I guess as I've gone on throughout my career and throughout even the last couple of years, I've come to really sort of realize what it is that I enjoy doing and what it is that I don't really like doing, and sort of starting to offload some of the stuff that I don't want to be doing and sort of focusing more on what I really do enjoy. So these days I do a lot of trying to get away from project management. I still do a little bit of that, but it's probably more so drafting and estimating and that kind of thing. So, yeah, and that's just for like mechanical air conditioning projects. So things that are like, just air conditioning in a large office building or in a multi-residential property or things like mechanical process cooling, so stuff like distilleries, wineries, big refrigeration plants, that kind of thing. So
Mate, there's going to be a whole bunch of people, you know, guys and girls that are listening to this and, you know, think it probably in a similar position to what you were when you transitioned away from sort of being in that sort of management role that, you know, you were sort of going through the motions and then, you know, recognizing what things that you didn't so much like about, you know, the nature of work for you and then realizing the things that you really wanted to have more of. Now, those people are probably also thinking, well, you know, oh, geez, I'd love to do that. I'd love to sort of break free of the shackles of, you know, their work that perhaps they don't enjoy as much as they once did, or maybe they've never enjoyed it and they just haven't got the guts or the motivation or the know-how or the understanding of what that's going to feel like or be like when they finally do decide to take on more of what they actually want to do. What advice would you give to people that, you know, are maybe in that position that are thinking, you know what, I don't want to, you know, do this every day. I actually, you know, I've got a real passion for something that's maybe completely different. How did you, you know, transition? How did you, you know, what sort of mental barriers did you come across? Did you have any barriers or were they all simply, you know, logistical in nature? What sort of advice would you give to people that are maybe in that position looking to step out?
I think there's a couple of things. Like one of the things mostly is to not underestimate your own value. You know, I was talking to a guy about it a couple of years ago, and he just sort of said to me, I'm just an electrician. And he kind of said it about himself like he just wasn't much. And he's like, oh, you know, I couldn't do what you do. I didn't go to university. I said, mate, I didn't go to university. I'm a refrigeration mechanic. That's all I am. You know, I don't hold a profession. Yeah, okay, I did a couple of, I've done a couple of little, you know, side courses and things like that may have gotten me a couple of little tickets, but there's certainly nothing special, nothing like a bachelor's degree or anything like that. But I think it's for not to undersell your own value. You know, I think in our current work market at the moment, particularly in trades at the moment, you know, I think trades aren't something that people really want to get into because they are physically hard, and you don't see a lot of people sort of flocking into trades, but they are quite a can be quite a lucrative industry to be in these days, you know, particularly for guys that are self-employed. So I think the key is not to undersell yourself that, you know, just because all you are is a tradie, that's all you are. You know, you're not less than anybody else, I think. And that's probably the, yeah, and it doesn't matter what you are, you know, whether you're an accountant or whether you're I don't know, just pick any kind of example of any sort of profession, a teacher or whatever it is. But I'm sure there are ways, you know, and I'm sure there are other trades like, you know, or professions such as nursing or whatever, and where you may think that, teaching and nursing is probably a good one because they are traditionally, if you're within those industries, you've probably, you know, got a rigid set of standards and a rigid set of employment opportunities that you can work within. But I was driving along the other day and I saw a van drive past me and it said, you know, in-home care, nursing solutions. You know, these people that have set this business up are obviously like nurses themselves, and they've set up a business and they're out in a van and they're doing like home care for people in their houses. And even probably the excuse of, you know, being something, you know, traditionally, you know, your employment opportunities of a nurse might be that you work at the Royal, or this is in Hobart in particular, but, you know, you work at the Royal or you work at Calvary or you work at the Hobart Private, and they're probably your three options. But I think as we go forward in work, people are starting to realise there are more avenues and opportunities to branch out into different areas. And, you know, my little point of difference is, you know, there's quite a lot of businesses around that, you know, I came from quite a large, or probably one of the larger firms in Tasmania, but there are a lot of smaller firms around that don't have the requirement for a full-time manager, but they might have just a day or two a week for a full-time for a manager. So, and that's where I kind of fit in nicely. You know, they don't have to pay me a full wage. You know, they only pay me for the time I'm there. And it also gives me a bit of flexibility to be able to spread around and do a few different, a few different things as well. So, yeah, there are some trade-offs. So, they're probably not getting somebody who's, you might have a manager. He might be only running one or two projects, and his head is just in those one or two things that he's managing, and that's all he's doing. So, you know, you have someone that's got a really intricate knowledge of all those kinds of things, but it's not necessarily what you always need. And do you want to be paying a guy, you know, 120 to 150 grand a year if you don't necessarily have a full-time requirement for that capability? So I guess that's where it's nice to be able to, you know, you've got to fit into that little niche. And I don't necessarily have to do a project manager. Yeah, I had a gig come in recently where some guys up in up north wanted me to do some drafting for them. And I mean, I didn't know anything about plumbing drafting. I know about how to draw ductwork, and I know how to use all the programs. And yeah, they had this like cool GPS model. I figured out how to get the software and download this thing and, you know, give them some drawings on their title blocks. And you know, it's just something that was a bit different, but yeah, I fell in, I found it interesting. I learned something new while I was doing it. So that's kind of what I like these days, you know, doing something different and learning something new. So yeah, the first thing for anybody that would be thinking of taking the step out, don't undersell yourself. You know, don't think you're just because you might not have a qualification, it doesn't mean that you don't have a unique set of skills that you can't, you know, provide to somebody that they may have just that need for what you can provide. So, and the other thing I would suggest too is that, you know, if you do feel a little bit unsure or stuck, there's no shame or nothing wrong with staying where you are until, you know, I went through this period probably maybe 6 or 7 years ago where I thought I was fed up with where I was and I was going to throw it all in. At the time, I didn't kind of have as much of the management experience. I was thinking about, you know, just buying myself a van and going out on the tools. And I'm glad I didn't, because I didn't at the time. Then I spent the next 3 or 4 years just really honing my skills in the office side of things and the design and the estimating side of things. And then I guess when the opportunity came around the second time, I picked up this whole new skill set that I was then able to apply to what I'm doing. So sometimes if you're unsure, sticking where you are isn't a bad course of action. But at the same time too, life generally will make things get less and less and less and less comfortable until something breaks, and eventually you're just like, okay, it's time now, and then it just becomes easy, you know. And it's almost just like a really easy transition to make once the you know, once things become too uncomfortable, then it's just a logical step. It just happens and away you go. So
yeah, I really like what you said there about how everybody has a unique skill set that, you know, they can offer up to, you know, the workforce in general. I mean, it's so true. Like you take any example you like, the chances are that within your organization or career or business that you're currently in, that there are skills within that you can go either out on your own or just apply to a different context. And I mean, you look at teaching, you know, there's always tutoring options. You look at, you know, most trades, a lot of the tradies that I know that have, you know, do some cashies on the side, or, you know, some of them make what they do, you know, on the weekend through their cash sort of side hustles as much as they do, you know, financially through their standard sort of 9 to 5. And I think about an example of a good friend who was a concreter, and he was working for an organization, you know, just sort of as an employee, and, you know, he was taking, you know, standard sort of concreting wage, 70 to 80K. And I think one day he just sort of realized, he's like, wow, you know, he's looking at the quotes that the boss was charging out, and he just sort of thought, wow, I can save my money and buy a couple of trucks, and you know, I can do this. I've got the experience. You know, obviously you can't do it straight away as an apprentice. Like that's when you, as you were saying, honing your skills and learning the knowledge that you need to before you sort of go out and do it for yourself. But, you know, after that phase is done, after you're sort of, you know, you feel that confident, you know, it might take 5 to 10 years, but it could be sooner. But after that, you know, this particular guy, he just said, yeah, I'll go out and I start my own concrete business. And I ran into him, actually spent a good day with him about a month ago. And he said to me, he just said, you know, Tim, this was the best decision that I ever made, was going out on my own. And, you know, it's not just from a financial perspective, but just the monotone nature of being an employee, sort of the robot that not that's ordered, but, you know, is pretty well instructed to sort of work within a set of parameters, as you mentioned before. And I think as humans, we crave, you know, polarity. We crave different experiences. And I remember I listened to a guy talk about, you know, life just being, you know, life these days is not a journey as it once was. Like, you know, throughout history, that it was a real sort of journey of discovery, and, you know, each day was quite different. But you know, these days in like a little office cubicle, like it's you know, some days can, you know, if you sort of put them all together, you can't even really remember, you know, any standout days. Like you just have a block of time in your head that all seems the same. But it's interesting to me that my standout days, the days that I can actually remember, are actually doing something with a, yeah, very different, or, you know, a high level of polarity to what I normally do. So, you know, whether it's, you know, even just driving a different route or going somewhere else, to me, I remember those days and can have conversations about those. But if you ask me what I did, you know, last week on a Wednesday, that would look or sound in my head very different to what it would be, you know, like the Wednesday before that, or the Wednesday before that, or even the Monday before that, if I'm stuck in an office gig, or, you know, maybe as an employee. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, for some people it's necessary, and some people crave security and meaning. And if it brings you meaning and it brings you happiness and joy, I think that's great. But I do think there's a large portion of people, and if there wasn't, you know, these people that sell, you know, alternative programs and ways to earn a living outside of that box thinking, you know, they wouldn't be as popular as they are, because I think people are, you know, they do get tired of seeing the same thing or doing the same thing. They want, they crave polarity in their life. And I know, Chris, you were mentioning before around your, you know, your management and your role in management. I'm curious just to delve into that a little bit in terms of your experience and just draw on some of that, because for me, you know, great management from an employee perspective is hard to come by. And one of the things that I always remember is a quote that a good friend told me, which was, leadership is simple, leaders lead. And it's so simple, like leaders lead people. And sometimes, as we know, that doesn't necessarily always happen in management. What advice do you have to people that are maybe in management or thinking about going into management, you know, from their current position and looking to inspire their workers or inspire the company that they work for, or even the staff that, you know, they're held responsible for? Do you have any sort of strategies or techniques that you found most effective in that sort of motivation process?
Pretty well exactly as you said just earlier. Like probably the best example that I saw with tangible results would have been like 10 years ago or so. I'd gone back to a company that I'd left for a few years. When I came back, I started working in their service division, which was just a complete like shambles. Like, they'd had probably a run of a few guys come through that, they'd been pretty hopeless. And then by the time, a heap of people had quit or been fired for whatever reasons. And by the time I came back, it was, there were maybe three guys there, and there was maybe like there's one really good kid that stood out, and the rest of it kind of dropped off pretty quickly from there. And so I kind of bided my time. There was a fellow that had been put in above me, and that was fine. He'd been an apprentice of mine a few years before, but I've just kind of let that, that was cool. I still just, did what I needed to do and worked under him happily and did what I needed to do. But then he went over to the UK, and I kind of ended up in his job as a service manager. So I had like three or four guys, but I was able to build this team at the time, employ all the guys that we ended up bringing into the team, and we ended up just creating this group just with this really good morale. Like, and I still talk to some of the guys to this day, 10 years after, and they all just say that it was, they'd never worked anywhere that had such good morale. And, we're all mates. Like, well, our thing was like, every morning we'd all start at the workshop. We'd all just talk about what we're doing for the day. All the jobs would be allocated, and then we kind of just discuss what we're all going to be doing. You might send we had sort of a lot of second and third year apprentices at that stage going out on their own. So green by some people's standards to be sending someone out in the van to start, let somebody loose. But I've always been of the opinion that you throw someone in the deep end and they'll pretty soon learn to swim, or they won't. I've always found that most people will, and most people want to be good at what they do. So you don't, they'll generally, do their best and strive for mastery of whatever they're doing. So that was the thing. We'd start at the start. We'd all talk about our jobs. You'd say, all right, I'm going to send you out to this job today. You might be sending a guy to a job that's a fair way out of his depth, but we would all be around to talk about it. And everybody knew where everybody was going. So if a guy sort of rang one of the other fellas up asking for a bit of help, we all kind of had a bit of an understanding of what each other were up to. But then the other thing that we did was we'd all come back to the office sort of half hour before knockoff time. And I know like that's half an hour of potential lost productivity, but what the knowledge that all these guys gained as a result of that half hour, we'd all come back, we'd make a coffee, and then we'd all just talk about our day. What do we do for the day? And, we would do some pretty complicated work on some pretty, big industrial equipment. We had, we'd work at some pretty large sites like the Longford Meatworks, where they, had 20 tons of ammonia in their refrigeration plant. If it leaked out, it would gas the whole town. They were massive plants, big industrial, dangerous pieces of equipment. That was only one example, but there are a lot of sites like that. But, you had second, third year apprentices all out working on these sorts of things, quite complicated stuff that a lot of guys wouldn't even touch until probably 10 years out of their time. But we'd all come back that afternoon, we'd all just talk about what we did for the day. And the older guys and the more senior guys, a young guy coming, he'd be scratching his head, not being able to work out, what this problem was that he had, and he couldn't figure out why he couldn't get his cooling into this place, or it might be just something simple like, some old lady's ducted aircon, he couldn't get it to work, and we'd all just talk about the problem. Okay, what could it be? Did you try this? And going through a process of elimination, we kind of got all the guys thinking of how to start ironing things out and how to fault find in a methodical manner and all this kind of thing, and we all just sort of. Everybody had input into that, and we ended up building this team of guys that I would say are probably the most skilled guys I've I've worked with, and it just came down to a good culture. And I think, when you guys came in, they may have come from elsewhere, but they pretty soon fitted into it. And I still think, even to this day, they've got a pretty solid team up there. That, and I'd just say I had a part in building it. I don't think I built it, but I definitely had a pretty good part in making that happen. So that was that. And then I guess another example, you said, leading from the front. Well, I remember one Saturday I was just out with the family, and the guys had been scheduled to do this job, and it was a pretty dangerous prick of a job. It was up on a scissor lift high up in the air, and we had to lift these big filter banks onto this refrigeration plant that was, it was a little bit sketchy at the best of times. And I think we'd had a senior tradesman booked in to do it. He couldn't make it, so it ended up being like three apprentices going and doing it, like I think a second, third, and a fourth year all doing it. And they called me early in the morning, and they just said, oh, look, we're a little bit unsure about this, So I dropped what I was doing, just thinking, it did have the potential to go wrong and for something, someone to really get hurt if they didn't do it correctly. So I dropped what I was doing, went out there with them on a Saturday. We just bowled it over. And I think that is an example of, I guess, leading from the front. It would have been easy to just say, nah, it's Saturday, I'm not working on Saturday, and left them to it. But I also had it recently on a job where, we need to go and put an extraction hood in over in a restaurant recently. And, we had to work from probably 9 p.m. to 3 in the morning, and again, I got in with the guys, did that myself. I think that breeds more, that gains more respect than talking about what you may have done once upon a time in the past. I think actually getting in there and showing them what you can actually do and helping out definitely gains a lot more respect with guys. So,
what about for teams or for people that don't have so much say so in the people that they have new management over? For example, somebody that's just stepping up to leadership who now has been sort of awarded or delegated, for want of a better word, a team of people that they really didn't have a lot of say-so in the development of. Now, these people that are in those positions are potentially working with people that, the culture may not be where they want it to be at the moment, and they know perhaps within themselves that they need to develop that. How do you go about, or how did you go about, talking with people at that level? So talking with these people within your team, to develop clear expectations of what you need them to do as part of the organization. And as you said before, you walk into some organizations or even standard sort of careers like maybe nursing or teaching or whatever, and you sort of sometimes have this, there's somebody who maybe thinks that they're above somebody else within an organization or organizational structure, without really sort of any credibility at all. How do you sort of, maintain authority, but in a peaceful sort of collaborative way, without coming off like, the ultimate sort of delegator? Do you have any sort of tips that you could pass on to people that are maybe sort of going through that or maybe struggling to establish authority in a collaborative way?
Probably so I have been through that as well. Like I have inherited a team that I haven't necessarily had control over. And one thing I kind of did learn through all of that is, somebody's always good at something. So I guess I was fortunate enough to have been in a business that was diverse enough that there's the old saying, you can't judge a fish's ability, you can't judge a fish on its ability to climb a tree. You look at some people, I've had a lot of people come to me and say, this guy's hopeless, he can't do this or he can't do that or whatever it is. And what I've sort of found is that everybody has a niche that they can fulfill, and they've got a task that they can fulfill adequately. And I guess, when you're young and you're kind of following the traditional business models. And, one other thing you kind of got to be mindful of, I don't know whether this is sort of an appropriate topic for your podcast, Tim, but just be mindful of bad karma that you're taking on as a result of somebody else's benefit. For instance, it's all very well for a general manager to come to a middle manager and say, that guy's useless, get rid of him. And okay, so you just go and, blindly follow an order. But at the end of the day, you were still instrumental in doing something pretty shitty to another person. So you've got to be pretty careful of what you actually are doing, whether under orders or not. But there are also times, quite often in a lot of things, I dug my heels in on somebody that, I'd been told to axe some guy because apparently he was no good, and I sort of dug my heels in and didn't. And it turns out those guys were good, but they just may not have been good at what they were delegated to do at a different particular time, but under a different set of circumstances or doing a different task, they're completely fine. So it's just a matter of probably working out what people's strengths are and then working to those strengths. There are some others that, just are generally bad for morale, unfortunately, like whatever it is, whether that, some people are just like a vortex of negative energy or bad vibes or whatever they are, and they can kind of, you can throw them into any team and they'll just destroy the morale instantly. And, you know, some of those people, unfortunately, can't really be turned around. And maybe then you've got to make a decision of, okay, what are you going to do? Are you going to keep this person around, or are you going to let them loose? And, yeah, quite often letting them loose. And also, too, letting them loose can be a good thing for them sometimes, too. Like, you know, you might need to manage somebody out, but that might actually be a good move for them. They might, maybe they were so negative and angry and bad to be around because they just didn't want to be where they were either. So by letting someone loose, you may have done them a favor as well. So it's, yeah, it's a difficult one, but I would just suggest, like, play people to their strengths. You know, if you have somebody that's underperforming in one area, that may not mean that they're completely useless. It may just mean that they might be useless in that area, but they may be really good in other areas. So try and play people to their strengths where you can.
And I suppose like a mentorship process may actually help that person develop in those sort of areas of weakness as well. And I think that that's always an overlooked strategy in pretty much any workplace, is just the good old-fashioned mentoring. Actually have somebody to, you know, show you the ropes. And the problem is, I think, with many businesses and careers is everybody is so busy that quite often mentorship gets overlooked. You know, that we're so busy, you know, thinking about the next task or objective that I guess sometimes we forget that, you know, some people do need and sometimes we ourselves need mentorship. I mean, you know, I think there's an assumption that when people step into management or leadership that, you know, they have all the answers and that, you know, they're going to be able to lead without fault. But I think the reality is that I suppose, you know, everybody could receive some level of mentorship regardless of sort of what stage they're in, I guess, with their career. Would you say that you've experienced much mentorship in your own climb, or was that something that you brought in with your team at all, in terms of, you know, maybe buddying up somebody that you thought would they'd get along with, or, you know, even going out there yourself, like you said in your example before, and just sort of maybe offering some solutions for next time?
Absolutely. Like, I would suggest that, oh, yeah, I've probably had half a dozen, you know, mentors that have helped me grow infinitely in my career. And I think, and you talked to any tradesman, you know, just about any tradesman could tell you who it was that taught them that particular skill, or who it was, you know, if I talk about like what makes a person good at what they do, it's quite often the person that came down on you the hardest. And, you know, I can remember copying some absolutely enormous reamings at the time I thought were like, you know, a little bit uncalled for, a little bit harsher over the top. But, you know, I always cleaned up after myself, and I always did things after that happened once. I never did it again. You know, I didn't want to experience that level of terror that I had to experience that one time when you had some, you know, angry old tradesman absolutely blasting you about something. And look, and that's, yeah, that's a good thing. But also, too, I've also had some very, you know, some brilliant mentors, you know, like, and I've been very fortunate, you know, where I landed into where I did my apprenticeship. I was incredibly fortunate, and every step along the way, I've always had just some people, like one or two people around me that have just been, you know, absolute gold to be around. And like what I've learned from them has been amazing. And I think, and it is very important. Like, and it's also good for the older guys that have that experience. So I had a fellow working for me down here in Hobart, and he was in his 60s. So obviously past his physical prime of, you know, he doesn't want to be carrying massive lengths of pipe or big bits of duct up to the top of a job site and whatever else. And I got him into the office one day and said, look, I don't want you to be busting your body doing that kind of thing, but you've got trade skills that our young guys need to learn. Like, you know, these old school guys just know things that young guys just don't have. They've been doing it for 30, 40 years, and they've probably learned things that they don't even teach anymore. So I had him put with a lot of these young guys, you know, teaching them how to do copper pipe work and just do things properly, like how they used to get done. And so, yeah, I think in that regard, like, it also means that, you know, the older people within any industry have a lot of value to add. And it's to, yeah, but you also need to be mindful that, okay, you know, whether you're allowing a little bit extra on a job to have somebody doing that kind of mentor. But like you said, it's difficult these days with the, you know, thin margins and the cost of labor, but it is something that, you know, can be factored in, and making sure that you are getting this knowledge out of these more experienced people, and those skills are being passed on to younger people coming through. So
I'm curious as well, Chris, around two areas that I think many people are looking for strategies to develop. And these two areas, I think the first one being, how can we celebrate success? And I think it all starts with the big question in my mind around, how do you celebrate success in a meaningful way? Like, I remember when I was a young kid, you know, I was a teenager, I was working in Coles, or I think it was Coles or Woolworths. I think it was Coles actually. And, you know, you're down in the staff room, and, you know, you don't know much about work. You're, you know, 15, 16, and you sort of look across in the staff room while you're heating up your 2-minute noodles, and, you know, there's the employee of the week, you know, with his Coles uniform on and the badge, and you know, there's not really even a description as to why he's employee of the week, and you know, they're just employee of the week because somebody decided that it was their turn, and you know, very little thought sort of went into it. At least that's what I could see. If there was thought, it certainly wasn't discussed. And you know, that's an example. The employee of the week obviously can be jazzed up in whatever way that you like, but in the very traditional sense of that that experience, I sort of thought to myself then and there, like, wow, like I actually don't care if I'm employee of the week. Like, I don't think I ever got employee of the week. Actually, I think I did, and I don't even know why I got it. They're just like, oh, you're the employee of the week. It's like, okay, great. What does that mean? And yep. You know, no one really sort of gave me any meaningful answer. It was just like, oh, you've been a good worker. It's like, ah, okay, what does that mean? So yeah, I guess that's the first question is, you know, did you have any strategies that celebrated success in a really meaningful way that you, I guess, helped foster motivation and foster performance? And on the flip side of that, how do you deal with underperformance? So, you know, somebody who is quite the opposite of employee of the week or worker of the week or, you know, whatever position they're in of the week, how did you sort of or how have you dealt with those that are maybe underperforming in a role or, you know, their performance isn't up to what would be considered the standard required for that industry?
I think in my case, what I used to notice was the people that did, I guess, usually go the like, employee of the week would generally just not, wasn't usually, it wouldn't be something that would go to somebody, you know, doing the run of the mill things, you know, just doing their job, I guess, and doing what they were paid to do. But it was often, it would go to somebody that was standing out, taking the extra responsibility, going the extra mile, and I guess, you know, putting their hand up and showing that they wanted to be there and wanted to sort of do more and take on more responsibility. So I guess, rather than having like an employee of the week, the reward a person gets like that, the person like that gets in life is usually what they're after. You know, they're the people that do get the added responsibility. They're the person that you would send out to something that, you know, you don't often give. I mean, look, occasionally you might give a really difficult task to a person that you know is going to be capable of performing it and handing it over. But also too, you know, usually their reward is in the task that they are allocated at work. So they will be given the extra responsibility that they're sort of often craving, because I guess we all want mastery of our lives as men, you know, or, and women too, you know, we all kind of want to be in charge, you know, we want to be looking after our own worlds and, you know, doing what we sort of want to be doing. So the people that step up and show responsibility are quite often rewarded by the tasks or the work that they might be given, whereas a person that might not be, or, you know, underperforming or needs a bit more guidance or a bit more management or that kind of thing, well, I guess their reward for underperforming is that they're probably more likely to be micromanaged. And look, maybe some people like that, but I don't know too many people that like that. You know, I think you know, people like to be in charge of their own destiny a little bit and in control of their own worlds. Like it's so I guess that would be probably without a directly having to you know, punish somebody or reprimand them. I guess how they're treated would be, they'd be treated differently to the person that wants to stand out and take responsibility. So and I guess that's probably a separate thing to you know, having to come down on somebody if they're really underperforming and they're really not doing well, then that gets into the realm of, I guess, performance management and all that kind of thing. And in that case, I've seen that be a positive thing on some people as well. Like usually when you go down the road of performance management, it's really when you want to try and push somebody out the door. And I've seen that happen a couple of times, and it's never a pleasant thing to go through. But quite often with a lot of people, just one really good severe kick up the ass is all they need. And that's, you know, you get them in, you sit them down, you give them the whole, you know, written procedure as to where they're underperforming and where they need to be doing better. And I've seen that work with spectacular results. You know, just after one thing, you know, you have one sit down, one really good meeting, tell them everything that's gone wrong. And then you might have a follow-up probably 2 or 3 weeks after that. But then after that, you've set them straight and they don't need to have that done again. You know, nobody likes going through that kind of thing. And nobody likes to do it either. Like it's just not really a very nice thing. But if it does ever have to happen, I have seen that happen with really good results. But I have also seen that, you know, with people that don't want to be there, and in the end it just, the process goes out and then they end up just being performance manager out of the organisation because they just really don't want to be there. And then they usually end up doing something else, and sometimes that works, or yeah, but sometimes it doesn't either. And you might hear down the track they've ended up in prison or something like that. Who knows? But
I think I really like what you were saying before about how, like, if you're rewarding somebody, sometimes the reward is actually just what they seek. Which you know, obviously in management you have some capacity to be able to enable that to happen. So I think, yeah, if somebody is, you know, going above and beyond, you know, so much more important than, you know, a bouquet of flowers or, you know, a bottle of champagne, is actually giving them, you know, what it is that they seek. And, you know, that's a big takeaway for me, you know, listening to your style there is actually, you know, enabling that or put your best foot forward to actually allow that to happen for that person, because obviously that is what they're seeking. And at the end of the day, there's an old quote that I think I heard online the other day. It said something like, hire fast, but fire faster. But then in between that, promote fastest. And I kind of, it kind of links to what you were just saying before. Like to me, if you've got somebody that is, you know, exhibiting all of those values that that are representative of the company, then, you know, you want to promote them the fastest, not just in terms of position, but, you know, responsibility, you know, within the company so that, you know, they can put their best foot forward. And of course, the underperformance, you know, it's, I suppose the consequence, for want of a better word, is that you know, they may not sort of be able to stay in that profession in the capacity that they sort of intended to be. But then, of course, you know, if they go a step further, you know, the chances are that they never wanted to sort of be there in the first place, and you're actually kind of doing them a favor or a service by you know, going through that sort of uncomfortable process, letting them go, and, you know, allowing them to maybe go to something that they are actually passionate about or can contribute something in a positive way. So, yeah, that, I found that really valuable, particularly around, yeah, the rewarding process. You sent me something, Chris. I remember talking earlier in the week. You sent me something. I'm trying to pronounce it, but it was something around ikigai. Is that how I pronounce it, or ikigai?
I'm not too sure. I actually don't know how it's pronounced. It's I think it's I-K-I-G-A-I. It's a Japanese word, and it so it goes around there's four main principles, like, so I can't even remember what they are off the top of my head. So, like, what do you – there's a Venn chart. You can look at
passion, mission, yeah, profession and vocation.
So I'm sure you can put it in the link, but it's just a Venn diagram. It's super interesting. I mean, look, I love the way the Japanese go about everything. Like, the Japanese just, like, operate with precision. Everything they do is just so so precise, and it's just they've got a philosophy for everything, and they've got a philosophy for work. And I think it's had I sort of known about that early on, I think you would definitely it's quite often what I weigh a lot of my choices in work about these days. So, do you love what you're doing? Can you get paid for what you're doing? Does what you do benefit others and provide a service to the world? And I can't remember what the last one was, but, you know, you need to be sort of, you know, what you do, you need to have value. There's more than just, I think there's more to life than just happiness. I think there's actually purpose. And I think that's where, you know, your employment forms a large part of who you are and what you do with your time. And, you know, and while you're out doing your work, you're also interacting with a lot of other people, other fellow humans, having sort of fellow human interactions and things with people. So, but yeah, what you do, you need to be engaged and loving it and doing it in a way that you actually, you know, in Japan, they even like a bus driver sees his role as he's providing a service to his community. It's his responsibility to get everybody's children to school safe. It's his response. You know, he sees what he does as part of a larger community and as part of a whole, and actually, you know, takes great pride in what he does. Or even, you know, a trash collector sees picking up rubbish and emptying and doing whatever as benefiting his community and doing you know, doing a service for his community. So, and I think, you know, if you have that in whatever you do, like, it's a – and look, if you don't have that, there's nothing wrong with that either. It might just be a thing that what you're doing isn't right for you. So just to keep that in mind, that whatever task it is that we choose to do, like, try and find a higher purpose in it, and also, yeah, do you love it? Can you get paid for it? And I try and emphasize that to my kids, you know. Don't sort of – my young bloke was telling me once he wanted to be a lawyer, and I don't think there's anything wrong with being a lawyer, but find out whatever it is that you're passionate about and then figure out a way to get paid for it. And then if you do it and you can also make other people's lives better for doing it, well, that's even better. You know, that's another bonus. So, and the more of those things that you can get in that Venn diagram is when you get sort of to the center of ikigai or ikagi or whatever it is. And I think, yeah, if you share – you could probably share a link to the Venn diagram, but I'm sure everyone's probably seen it on Facebook from time to time. But, yeah, it's quite an interesting thing when you look at it.
It was interesting. I hadn't seen it before. I've seen similar things, but I think it was a really nice representation of sort of the nature of work. And I think it'd be a great thing to show young people, particularly in schools, where, you know, they are looking for guidance of what their next steps are. And I know, I don't think that, you know, we as a society do a great job at, you know, guiding people in general into, you know, their optimal workplace or optimal profession. I think that it's really left up to chance a lot of the time, or even that, you know, the parents' influence, which is fine, but actually giving people, like anything, giving people the tools, you know, empowering people to make their own decisions is always going to sort of win out. And I think something like this, where you're actually going, hey, there is some things to think about before you pull the trigger on something. Like, I wish that, yeah, somebody showed something like that to me, and how different or maybe how that's similar, it would be quite interesting to see where people end up if only they considered some of those things. So I think a lot of people, you know, end up in professions, business, you know, out of sometimes just through, you know, who their parents were. Like, hey, you know, mum was a lawyer, dad was a lawyer, I'm going to be a lawyer. Mum was a greengrocer, dad was a greengrocer, family business, I'm going into it. Talking to some guys the other day, you know, the third generation chemical manufacturers, like, you know, that's all they've done. So when I say all they've done, it's great. Like, I love it. I love the whole generational thing. I'm just saying, like, I'd be really curious to know if that third generational you know, chemical manufacturer ever had, yeah, like, you know, are you passionate about making chemicals? You know, does it provide, you know, does it give you some sort of mission? Does it give you, I suppose, you know, the world does need chemicals. Obviously, you can get paid for it. Are you good at it? Do you love it? I guess it just opens up a few more doors for people that maybe are in those positions where they've sort of been funneled in kind of like a bit of an artificial or perhaps just a different way into a career or profession. Chris, this has been a fantastic conversation, very enlightening conversation. I just want to really, thank you for your time coming on the show and sharing with us the nature of work from your perspective. And, it's been full of wisdom as I expected. And, just want to thank you for coming on. And if people want to get in touch or use any of your services around refrigeration, is there anywhere they can go or check out? Or would you prefer not to be found at this current point in time?
Just word of mouth. I guess if anybody's interested, they can either hit you up, I guess, and you can pass on my details. But, I don't really advertise my services too much. They just kind of – word of mouth is usually how I promote. So if anyone gets in touch with Tim, you can point him in my direction and we can go from there. So, but yeah, thanks for having me on. Well, it's been good fun. So
thanks, Chris. Really appreciate your time. And as always, for those listening, we'll have all of the show notes in the description on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys are listening to the show from. And we'll include I'll attempt to include the image of the ikigai, or however it is that you pronounce it, triple or quadruple. I think it's a quadruple Venn diagram that Chris has provided for us. So once again, Chris, appreciate your time, mate, and look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Well, there you go, crew. Chris is one of those guys you can literally sit around with for hours and just sort of pick his brain over just about any topic you want. He'd have some information that's super valuable about whatever the topic is. Probably my big takeaway from today's episode was around that Venn diagram of how you should decide, or what the Japanese philosophy sort of gives up as a bit of a roadmap to thinking about what work will be really, really good for you as a person. It sort of tackles four main questions. What do you love? What does the world actually need? What can you get paid for? And then what are you good at? And that sort of then links in or ties in with your passion, your mission, your vocation, your profession. And if all of those things sort of come together, you get this statement called ikigai, which I don't actually know what the literal translation means. I should probably look that up. But basically, it's the complete alignment of all of those variables. And apparently, you'd be the most fulfilled in your work. I was thinking about it after the show and thinking how, you know, in Australia and probably much of the Western world, we just don't have a lot of philosophy around work. If anything, it seems to me that most people are just wanting to have as little time at work as possible and as much free time and as much time that is their own as possible. But I'm just sort of, I guess, questioning it all a little bit more now, where maybe having more work that is really, really aligned with your philosophies and really, really aligned with who you are as a person, maybe would lead to more fulfillment than what more free time would. It's an interesting question to start thinking about anyway. Crew, if you have not checked out our Instagram page, please do so at Mr. TM Walters. We show what everyone looks like. We post up key insights from every episode that we do. We're probably a couple episodes behind. So what this episode, when this episode is live, we're probably about 2 weeks later, and then we sort of get to the short form content. So check us out at Mr. TM Walters on Instagram. The same thing on TikTok. If you want to check us out there, we're pretty green on TikTok, but we're slowly getting more frequent with those posts. Other than that, crew, please drop us a DM if you have an interesting profession, career, or business that you want to chat about. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, crew, take care, and we'll see you next week.